I am personally most depressed, most deeply unhappy in the morning after I do not get a good night's sleep. I remember once while I was living in Maryland, I had trouble sleeping because I had an early airplane flight the next morning. So I called the shuttle bus the day before and arranged for them to pick me up at 6 a.m. at home, got up at 5 a.m. and showered and got ready to go. Got to the Baltimore airport at about 6 a.m. and left at 6 a.m., got there about 7. And then I went up to the ticket counter and I spoke to the clerk saying that I couldn't see my flight listed on the electronic board. She checked and then explained to me that my flight was leaving from Washington National Airport, not from Baltimore. I had gone to the wrong airport. Now, I was already sleep deprived. A wave of despair swept over me. I remember I looked behind me out the windows to the street. Buses were driving by on the road, and I imagined just throwing myself under their wheels. My rational side said, "Roger, this is a minor event of no importance." But my emotional side was hitting bottom. The clerk rescheduled my flight so I could take a flight out of Baltimore, and her kindness helped. However, as I walked away from the counter, I was still feeling irrationally depressed, very unhappy. So to lift my spirits, I turned to drugs. I drank a very strong cup of coffee, ingesting caffeine and sugar. And within a few minutes, I felt much better. That cloud of hopelessness and irrational despair lifted. Now, last week I said that studies indicate happiness is partially determined by genetics, by our heredity. Some of us are born with a tendency to feel happy, and some of us are born with a tendency to feel depressed. But I also said last week that we have some control over our happiness because our mood is also affected by the comparisons that we make. A simple conversation can make us happy after spending a day in silence. A nice warm shower makes us happy after a week of camping in the woods. But sometimes these experiences of comparison are not enough to raise our spirits. So today I want to explore the idea that chemicals, the things we put in our bodies, might make us happy. Because of time restraints, I'm only going to talk about a few of the possible chemicals, those that we can legally put in our bodies to help us feel happy. If we were in Colorado, my sermon would take a different direction. Unitarian Universalism is deeply rooted in British American values. We promote, in this church, individuality, self-reliance, and self-sufficiency. British American cultural traditions teach that happiness originates from within ourselves. Therefore, happiness is something that we must earn. When we encounter problems, especially emotional problems, our culture teaches us that we should carry on. It teaches us to take responsibility for our problems and not to complain. An unhappy person is that way we are taught because of their negative thinking, and thus they earned their unhappiness. The need to take medication for happiness is traditionally seen in our culture as a sign of failure, something shameful, a sign of weakness that needs to be kept secret. Now, I see value in the power of positive thinking. This movement began more than 100 years ago. In the 19th century, a Portland, Maine man, P.B. Quimbley, became known as a successful healer. People would come to Quimbley with various illnesses, and he would prescribe chemical remedies. After some experience, Quimbley realized that some of his patients were responding just as well to his cheap and simple, ineffective remedies as they were to the expensive and complicated ones. This led him to conclude that his patients' belief, their belief in the effectiveness of the remedies, played a decisive role in their cure. The healing was due to their mental attitude. So he gave up other cures in favor of the power of mental suggestion. He had discovered what doctors today call the placebo effect. One of Quimbley's patients was a woman who suffered from what we would call, what were called back then, and we still call today, nervous attacks or panic attacks. Her name was Mary Baker Eddy. Quimbley's success in treating her so excited her that she founded a religion, the Christian Science Church, in 1879, based on Quimbley's methods. And then in 1891, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, who had attended Christian Science classes, established the Unity School of Christianity on the principle that healing is in the power of mental suggestion. Both new religious movements attracted thousands of followers. In addition, writers published self-help books on the power of the mind to heal. The children's story, The Little Engine That Could, was published 100 years ago and came out of this movement, saying over and over, "I think I can. I think I can." That is the way to success and the way to happiness. By the 1920s, old-line Protestant clergy began to preach this new mind-cure religion as part of their own theology. Most famous of these was Norman Vincent Peale. He was a Methodist-ordained minister serving a Dutch Reformed church in New York City. Peale presented the idea of positive thinking as a way to happiness in the 20th century. One of Norman Vincent Peale's disciples was a man named Robert Schuller, who took the message to Southern California, built a cathedral of steel and glass, and carried the message of positive thinking to millions on a national television broadcast. And in this century, a minister in Houston, Texas, named Joel Osteen, nicknamed the Smiling Preacher, he has continued this gospel of positive thinking. 7 million people watch Osteen's television worship service each week. This theology of positive thinking is the message that many unhappy people hear. They are told, happiness is a choice. You've got to work on it. Come on, cheer up, change your attitude, pull yourself together. However, while the power of positive thinking movement was growing in popularity, medical professionals were beginning to discover chemicals that influenced our brains. Some began to suggest that deep unhappiness is not actually a moral or religious problem. It is a biological illness. The first antidepressants appeared on the market in the 1950s. Now, they didn't work on everyone, and they had side effects. Scientists continued to try to develop new drugs that might be effective in the treatment of depression. The drug we today call Prozac was first developed in the 1970s. Its American developer, Eli Lilly, found that the chemical constituted Prozac reduced hypertension, reduced blood pressure problems in some animals. So researchers tried it as a blood pressure medication for humans. These tests failed. Then, still trying to find a use for this new capsule they had created. They tried it as an anti-obesity therapy to help people lose weight. Again, it failed. But about five of the folks in the anti-obesity study reported that their mood was raised considerably by taking Prozac. So they decided to try another clinical experiment on volunteers with mild depression. And they found that this chemical had a remarkable power to lighten people's moods. They went through 10 years of clinical trials, and then in December of 1987, Prozac received approval from the Food and Drug Administration for treatment of depression. And our culture had started to change. In the mid-1980s, drug companies had started the first national direct-to-consumer television ad campaigns for prescription drugs. So we were told by watching television ads about Prozac that deep unhappiness is not just a moral problem. It's not just an issue of our attitude. It can be, at least in part, a biological illness. In the last few years, at least 12 new drugs have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of depression. They are similar, but not identical, to Prozac. They are called second-generation antidepressants to distinguish them from that first generation that appeared in the 1950s. The theory of how these work, which is hotly debated, is that between the cells in our brains, there are very tiny chemicals. These chemicals send information between these cells. We feel depressed when the amount of chemicals between these cells decreases and the information is harder to communicate because of the lack of chemicals. Antidepressants increase the amount of these chemicals that exist between the cells in the brain and thereby end our depression and raise our mood. Today, antidepressants are one of the most commonly prescribed classes of drugs in the United States. Prozac and other second-generation antidepressants have proven to help relieve symptoms of depression in, and again, this is a hotly debated issue, but it is generally believed it helps in at least 55% of the people who take them. None of the 12 different drugs have clearly been shown to be more effective in relieving symptoms or bringing about a full recovery than any other. So doctors work with the clients trying the different drugs, hoping to find one that will work on a particular individual. Well, are people who take antidepressants happy? About 45% of the people who take an antidepressant do not feel any better. But 55% of the people feel that they have returned to a more normal state. They no longer stay in bed all day. They no longer feel hopeless. They can enjoy being with people again. Here's one story by a writer named Mara Kelly. It was published in the Atlantic magazine in 2012. Kelly writes, "I never thought my own moodiness was serious enough to warrant medication. I had, frankly, scoffed at antidepressants as an easy way out for the weak." She was obviously trained in Protestant theology. She said, "I preferred to fix my psychological problems the hard way, through therapy. That seemed to me to be more sustainable and real. But then I found myself on the Brooklyn Bridge late one December night, contemplating a swan dive in terrifying detail. The funny thing is, I thought it was less depression than insomnia that was driving me crazy. For close to a decade, I'd had major sleeping problems. I tried everything, and I couldn't could not think to cure myself. I tried everything to cure myself. I cut out all alcohol. I cut out all caffeine. I practiced better sleep hygiene, according to the experts. I tried melatonin, but nothing had worked. I never thought I was truly depressed before that point. Mopey, maybe. A little screwed up, sure. In therapy to try to figure out why I had so much trouble with relationships, certainly. But as it turns out, vividly envisioning your own suicide in the spot where you'd actually go through with it is a quite compelling way to start to believe that, yes, you are definitely depressed. After getting down from the bridge, I went to see my primary care doctor and told her in tears about what happened. She got me started on an SSRI, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, that magically solved my sleeping problems. As she told me during that visit, insomnia can be both a symptom and a cause of depression. If I had heard that before, it had not really registered. The more rested I felt, the more energy I began to have. So in this case, an antidepressant medication restored Mara Kelly to life, giving her a certain basic sense of well-being. This return to a more normal emotional state is the most common reaction when a depressed person has success with an antidepressant. Now, this is a threat to some of us who are religious leaders. Because of the positive thinking movement, people have come to see churches as a place to come to when they want to feel happy. And in the 1990s, as I heard about all of this, I began to wonder if people can take a capsule that lifts their spirits, and if they are going to church to get their spirits lifted, could the drug industry take over this role from the church? Would the pews become empty? I asked church-going people who were taking antidepressants. They all said essentially the same thing. The antidepressant, they said, does not make it unnecessary for me to go to church. It makes it possible for me to go to church. Without an antidepressant, I would stay at home in a blue funk. With an antidepressant, I can come to church, hear the music, participate in the conversations, and consider the ideas in the sermon. An antidepressant does not in any way replace the church. So, Roger, they told me, relax. With the invention of antidepressants, you can look forward to a healthier congregation. We will still need the renewal we get at church, along with the moral and intellectual stimulation that the church offers. So I felt reassured. 15 years ago, using the money from the sales of Prozac, Eli Lilly built a state-of-the-art drug research facility in Indianapolis, where scientists tried to create a new antidepressant. Their patent was running out in 2001. Scientists there were trying to create a new antidepressant that would work even better than Prozac. Other pharmaceutical companies also worked on this. So far, they have produced 12 different antidepressants. The number is a little iffy because some drugs have been approved by the FDA for other purposes that are also being used for antidepressants. So it might be 13 or 14. The hope was that with advances in our mapping and understanding of the brain and advances in constructing these new drugs, true happy chemicals would make the transition from science fiction to science fact. 15 years later, however, almost all these major drug companies have curtailed these expensive research programs. the attempt to discover a better happiness chemical, one without side effects, has stalled. The research money is shifting to look at how brain networks work and how they might be manipulated to make us happy. One example is a non-chemical treatment that comes out of England, transcranial magnetic stimulation. This procedure uses magnetic fields to stimulate nerve cells in the brain to improve symptoms of depression. A large electromagnetic coil is placed against your scalp near your forehead. The electromagnetic creates electric currents that stimulate nerve cells in the region of our brain that controls our mood. It works for some people. Other research in this area continues. Meanwhile, if you think you are depressed, I urge you to seek help. Positive thinking is a good, effective thing. Changing your attitude is useful. But sometimes it is just not enough to just say, I think I can, I think I can. Depression is an illness, not a sign of moral weakness. Antidepressants do not always work. But for many people, they are an effective treatment for the illness of depression. Now, in my own case, my happiness chemicals of choice remain caffeine and sugar, both of which consistently make me happy day after day. Although the drug sugar has a side effect. Still, properly caffeinated, my mind is clear and alert. And sometimes, in these moments of clarity, I look around at my complex life, the automobiles, the airplane trips, the computers, the cell phones, and I wonder, do the stresses of modern society drive us to consume chemicals like caffeine or Prozac so that we can be happy? One of my favorite writers that I quote frequently from the pulpit is the Kentucky writer Wendell Berry. And he teaches that frequent contact with nature is what is missing in our lives. He would say that our lack of contact with the natural world is why we need the stimulation of caffeine or Prozac to be happy. Wendell wrote, "At the end of July, I was using a team of horses to mow a small triangular hillside pasture that is bordered on two sides by trees. I was suddenly aware of wings close below me. It was a young, red-tailed hawk who flew up into a walnut tree. I mowed on to the turn and stopped the team of horses. The hawk then floated to the ground, not 20 feet away. I got off the mower, stood and watched, even spoke, and the hawk showed no fear. I could see every feather distinctly, claw and beak and eye, the creamy down of the breast. Only when I took a step towards the bird, separating myself from the team and the mower, did he fly. In some circles, I would certainly be asked if one can or should be serious about such an encounter, if it has any value. And though I cannot produce any hard evidence, I would unhesitatingly answer yes. So, in addition to chemicals like caffeine or Prozac, I would prescribe chemicals that come with the smell of fresh sea air on a Florida beach. I would prescribe the chemicals that create the vivid green colors of the summer trees in Florida. I would prescribe the chemicals that produce a beautiful June rain in Florida. For these chemicals can also raise our spirits, give us joy, and make us happy that we are alive.